This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Also, help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day by becoming a Trek FM patron through Patreon. Get access to exclusive content and become part of the team. You'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he is every show, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, looking good today in those removable sideburns.
Dang it, how did you know, Chris? Oh, I thought they were good. I thought they looked good. Come on, man.
You were pretending to be your twin brother, but I can see right through that.
Everybody... I thought everybody was going to think I was Max and not Matt.
Right. All right. Well, today we're going to do a commentary, which is something we haven't done here on The Orb in quite some time. And we're going to talk about the episode Defiant, in which Jonathan Frakes gets to wear those removable sideburns. And they're kind of awesome.
They are really awesome, actually. More people should wear them.
More people should wear them.
Totally.
I can see that becoming a thing.
Yeah, I don't know why it's not a thing.
All right, well, let's get into things here. So, again, it's been a while since we've done a commentary, and sometimes people, when they see commentaries come up in their podcast feed, they think, oh, I can't listen to this episode. I have to wait until I can go home. I can sit down in front of the TV and follow it. Well, don't worry. The way that Matthew and I do commentaries, you can listen to this with no problem, and we'll have a great conversation and take you through. I also put the audio of the episode very softly underneath to help you follow along, because I know that most of the time, if you're like me listening to podcasts, you're probably on the go somewhere, or you're at work, or you're doing something. So please tune in anyway, even though it's a commentary, and I think you'll enjoy it. So, Matthew, let's go ahead and get the episode rolling here. So, everyone, go ahead and cue this up on your DVD player, on Netflix, however it is that you watch Star Trek. And you can hit record with us in 3, 2, 1, play.
Kira, we've got 6 Byzantium transports coming in this afternoon.
You know an episode is going to be successful if it starts off with Jensia. All
right, have them offloaded. Oh, is that, that's how you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. So,
well, I like that they have so many problems right out of the gate.
Yeah.
And apparently Kira has not had her Rakdigino today.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's always a problem if you ask me. So, I mean, I feel that way if I don't have my coffee in the morning.
But I like how they set this episode up where Kira has 99 problems.
Well... At least it's not 100. I mean, it could be worse, right?
Major, the scheduled transport...
Now, this is nice. This is still... Well, this is season 3, right? This is about halfway through season 3. And the relationship between Kira having done her own thing, being part of the militia, being part of the resistance, and then Bashir... And the role of a Starfleet doctor who can overrule even the captain mm-hmm. when they think that their behavior is detrimental to their duty.
Yeah. Well, and I kind of like that, you know. It's what's interesting here is this episode is showing off the nice sexual tension between these two actors.
They really do have
a great chemistry together on screen. But it makes for a great scene between them as the Doctor is challenging Kira, and he's not, I mean, you know, you think about how he came on the show and she just looked at him like he was the biggest moron on the planet, and just a complete jerk. And he is taking care of her mentally and physically, even when she does not want to be. And I think that's really special.
It also shows a bit about her personality in general, because, you know, she's fighting and fighting, but the moment that she realizes that he can make her go off duty, she's so apologetic. Right. She says, no, wait, I didn't mean it. But she is one of those people who just can't relax, right? I mean, you even see Jadzia trying to get her to relax throughout the series.
Well, I mean, when you think about it, she is a woman who has spent her entire life active at war. You know, I mean, it is so...
always on guard.
Yeah, exactly. She's constantly vigilant about everything, and she is wound very tight, and she spent really her entire life being wound the tightest. And so it's really interesting to see, you know, this character have to learn that I don't have to be wound to my tightest every single minute of every single day, you know?
Exactly.
Hope you've got room for the unexpected.
And here's Riker. Now, the setup here is kind of interesting, because basically what they're saying here as they make this episode in, what, 1995? Mm-hmm. Would it be for Defiant 1994, late 94? Is that Kira really needs to relax, and so what she needs is a man. That seems to be the commentary here, right?
No. What I actually think it is I think it goes beyond that. I think it's that she needs somebody to show her how to have a good time, you know, and.
And Riker knows how to have fun.
And Riker knows how to give a good time. We all know that.
But Jadzia knows how to have a good time as well.
That is true. That is true. But I think, I feel like for Kira, she needed somebody who was out of her life at that point to kind of bring her in and show her. You know, after a while, you stop listening to the people around you. That are your closest friends sometimes. And so somebody else coming in and kind of giving you a little bit of guidance, or just kind of making you look at something from a different perspective, changes everything. So I think you can actually go deeper with this. I mean, surface level, yes, sadly, it could be seen as they just wanted to get Kira laid with Riker. But I really don't think that that's what they're doing. I don't think it's that superficial. And I think it makes for an interesting episode, as later on down in this episode, Kira is going to be challenged by somebody who has some beliefs that they hold that are very close to what she used to believe, you know, and how she used to be. And this episode actually becomes all about how much Kira's really changed.
Yeah, that's a good point. And a really good point about her needing somebody who is from the outside as well. One thing before we get too far away from the scene there of Quark putting all the things down on the table for her. I love the Jumja stick. He's like, you know, here's this and this and this, and here's a Jumja stick. And I was picturing, like, in a Bajoran hotel, like when housekeeping comes in and they make the bed in the hotel, do they put like a Jumja stick on the pillow? Because that seems like it would be really messy.
I hope not. Hopefully if they put it on the pillow, it's on a plate or something so that, you know, it's just not this sticky mess on the pillowcase. That's gross.
It is kind of gross, yeah.
Quark's double wheel has been a little stingy lately.
Let me ask you a question here. Did you see this episode in first run, or did you see it later on?
I did see this episode in first run. So
okay.
By this point,
so let's think back to first run, because this is an episode that really only works completely the way the writers want it to if you see it in first run, because the very first time this aired, you as a viewer really did think that was Will Riker at this point.
Will Riker.
Yeah, I mean, it was very hard to tell. I mean, obviously, when he's in that uniform, that's who he's playing, you know? So they do such a great job of playing on your expectations. And I don't think that they play on... I love it. I think it's great. And I think this episode still works even when you know that it's him, you know?
It still works, but when you know that it's Tom Riker, the beginning kind of loses a little bit of that surprise, because it wasn't long after TNG had left the air, and it still made sense to you that you're going to have this crossover character, and why not bring Will Riker on? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
When Jadzia talks about playing with Riker a year ago when he visited the station, it's interesting because I think about what that dynamic might be like with Curzon Dax and Riker. And even though it's Jadzia, but Jadzia has all of Curzon's memory and part of his personality in there. It must have been kind of a wild night, I would think.
I'm kind of speechless just thinking about it, Chris. I don't even know. Like,
and I don't mean a wild night between like Jadzia and Riker as a man and woman or anything like that. I mean like them in the bar, you know, as like a couple of guys knowing Riker's personality.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that would have been so much fun. It's just to be in a fly on the wall and watch those guys kind of go back and forth with each other and everything. I think it would have been fantastic.
Because remember that Riker has the most experience with Klingons of anyone that we've known from the past crews as well. You know, he had his time over in the exchange program, and that would be interesting as well.
Yeah, that's very true. And it makes me like, to me, when you say that, it always makes me think of how interesting the character of Dax would just be to hang out with. You know, and all those lifetimes and all of the different personalities that can come out at any moment. I just think it's really fantastic. And I like how Riker here is like, maybe we could get a look at that ship of yours sometime. That'd be great. I mean, if we have time.
I like how he just happened to be coming around the corner at that moment. Like he was obviously standing back there peeking, waiting for her.
Yep, exactly.
Major Kira Nerys, Bajoran Militia.
Identity confirmed.
Do you think that they're a little bit too trusting with their security? I mean, I know he's the first officer of the flagship, but still, it's quite easy for him to steal this ship.
It is. You know, I think what's really interesting here is the idea of, you know, because he's playing Commander Riker, that the character who has, you know, just an amazing amount of respect.
Yeah.
What's interesting here, though, is this whole little bit with O'Brien, which I don't understand, like why they don't want to talk to each other. What are they referencing?
Well, I understand it now, but I've had to go through this episode many times, and we talked about it on the Ready Room as well. I think that what's going on here is that Tom Riker knows that if he actually talks to O'Brien for more than a minute or so, O'Brien will pick up on something and realize that that's not Will. And then he will go back and think, maybe that's Tom. Maybe I should let Sisko know that something odd is going on. And so for Tom Riker, the best way to avoid that situation is just to have this confrontation with O'Brien and make sure that O'Brien doesn't talk to him.
And it's just weird because O'Brien kind of comes out and he has this look of like, and then he kind of has this look of resignation of like, oh, but I'm like, what in the world could he possibly be referencing or pulled out somewhere?
Yeah.
That, I don't know. It's very,
well, he's not referencing anything. That's why it's so confusing to O'Brien, and O'Brien just leaves like, I don't even know what to say.
Delta 547 Alpha.
But what is weird about that, the very first time you go through this episode when it first aired, is that at this point, until right here, when he shoots Kira, you still think that this is Will Riker. And then you're wondering, why is Will Riker saying this to O'Brien? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, exactly. This is great. It's a good, it's a really good setup.
I think they pulled this off really well. The writing, the acting, everything. I think they pulled this off really well that first time through.
Well, and I kind of wish that we had gotten just a little bit more time with quote unquote Riker, You know, yeah. I think that would have been interesting. But they play it well enough because you would expect that the Tom Riker character is trying to get things done as quickly as possible because he does know that there are people that know him and could trip him up.
We'll beam the two of you out of there as soon as you're clear.
Docking clamps released.
Well, you never know. You know, Sisko could receive a message from Will Riker just by coincidence while he's there too, right? So you need to get out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When Will calls, we're going to be stopping by Deep Space Nine next week, and wait, you're there, and he's there. Like, what? Who's who here?
I think this was a good use of the ship as well at this point, because it's new to the series. You know, even it gives Riker a reason to drop by, too. Like, oh, I heard you got this new ship. I'd love to see that thing.
Well, and I mean, think about Will just in general. I think the real Will Riker would be very excited to see something like the Defiant. You know, this is much different than the Enterprise. And, you know, I think he's just that kind of guy who would be interested in the best the fleet has to offer because he's on the flagship. But, you know what? It's kind of palatial palace to see like a real rough and tumble starship. I think would be a real treat for him.
Well, Will has de-sideburned there, and so now we know we're really into the heart of the episode.
To William T. Rikers.
That's when things get serious. When the moment you tear off the sideburns, Chris, you know you're in trouble.
Exactly.
The second Riker was finally discovered 2 years ago. He chose to use his name.
Of course. Dukat is going to be drinking through this whole presentation.
Yeah, well, you know, when you get to the Cardassian station, there is nothing like picking up a bottle of fresh Kanar and...
Now, that's the Kanar bottle that we saw in the Maquis Part 2, so we've got a prop reuse here. And I wanted to ask you, do you think the Cardassians are trying to compensate for something with these Kanar bottles? Because that's just a really massive bottle that's very unnecessarily ornate just to hold a beverage.
The starship Gandhi. While he was there,
you know, I don't know, Chris, have you ever been, you know, down the whiskey aisle? You know, you see those really, really cool bottles there, and there's just something about getting a really nicely made bottle that has, you know, your favorite drink in it. So I can understand that, you know, you'd want to pull down your favorite alcoholic beverage and feel classy just by holding the bottle.
So Dukat feels classy here.
That's what I'm thinking. I think all Cardassians feel classy when they drink Kanar, which has got to be great because it looks like it tastes awful.
But any entry into the zone must
does,
be a joint
it looks like
it really
oil.
Does. It just looks like molasses with a little bit of water added or something. It just looks gross.
Any joint operation, Commander.
Now, it's interesting the point that Dukat makes here because, I mean, he's absolutely right that the Cardassian military is not going to listen to any of this story about a transporter duplicate.
Mm-hmm.
And the Federation, they really have a very serious situation on their hands here. And it is incredible how easily their security failed.
They will send a fleet.
Well, and you make a huge point there. That is, I think, something that is a big problem. Because if they don't get this under control, they could be responsible for some awful things. You know, and this could precipitate a huge war with the Cardassians because of what Tom Riker's done. And like you said, really, there is a lot of lax security happening here. The fact that they have been able to hijack a state-of-the-art starship with little to no resistance whatsoever is... I mean, it's bad. It just looks bad. So they have a lot to answer for, and they are going to be in a heap of trouble if they don't get this starship back quickly. And, you know, the Cardassians are doing such a great job of taking every advantage they can here about what they can learn about the Defiant and its weaknesses. So, I mean, it's just bad all around, unfortunately, for the Federation at this point.
Her weaknesses. You'll help us destroy one of your own ships.
I want to try and disable it first.
But I do like Sisko's resolve here, the fact that, you know, Dukat challenges him, would you help us destroy one of your own ship? And he's like, well, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But he is very much willing to do whatever it takes, obviously, to not let this ship cause an intergalactic incident or to not get it back, have it fall into enemy hands.
So hesitation on Sisko's part in terms of just destroying the Defiant if they find it, do you think it's because Kira's on the ship? Do you think it's because he helped design the ship and he has some desire as the creator of the ship to not destroy the creation? Because otherwise, when you consider what's at stake, I would think that the captain would be able to make a decision to destroy that ship. I mean, Tom Riker, he stole the ship, right? So I wouldn't be as concerned. I mean, obviously you would want to avoid killing anyone if you could, but considering the war that it could precipitate, it's within reason to simply destroy the ship.
Yeah, no.
If you have to.
It could be a little bit of nostalgia for the ship. But I'd also think that Sisko believes that he can find a way to end this peacefully. You know, a lot of people don't give credit, I think, to Sisko enough for being somebody who can be diplomatic and get through situations without using his fists, you know, or using some kind of violence. And I think Sisko is very confident in his ability to handle this situation in a way that is the best outcome for everyone. But, I mean, goodness, the fact that this is one of, I feel like, the first episodes, too, where we really get to see kind of a central command hub of the Cardassians.
It is. And, it's actually the only time we get to see this.
Yeah, and the fact that Sisko is actually in that building is really interesting. I think this episode is doing a lot. It's really not just the Tom Riker episode, but there's a lot of world building happening, especially with, you know, this is also where we get the mention of what's going on, I think, with the Obsidian Order and their build up in one of the before the Dias Cast episode. You know, this is where we get some of that setup. So this is really, really good stuff.
I'm sure you can understand that although we all respect Gul Dukat's decision to bring you here, we must take some precautions.
Of course. I would have done
one quick
same.
Question. When we came into Cardassia here, we saw the city. That's a matte painting, and it looks great in SD. How do you think those elements are going to hold up when they eventually remaster DS9 and we have things in HD? Do you think they're going to have to do like new CGI cityscapes for those types of scenes?
That's a great question. I think maybe you, I don't know, can you take the original element and add to it to make it bigger or something? That really is a good question. How good are the matte paintings and their resolution to be able to hold up? And I mean, you know, I think these days you could probably get a CGI artist to be able to recreate that in a high resolution.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And it looked very similar. You know, the same thing they did with TOS, where they really were trying to catch the spirit of the original and not really change too much. I think they could do the same thing here and keep that same spirit alive and maybe even just give a little bit more movement to it or something just to add some nice elements. But, every time I watch the show, I got to say, Chris, I am ready to see it in HD because every time I'm watching it on my television, I am so disappointed by how it looks. Actually, it looks best on my iPad.
It does look pretty good there.
Before she attacks.
I have some more thoughts on that, actually, because of something I saw recently. But while we're in this scene here real quick, It's interesting. I like Sisko's reaction. As you mentioned earlier, when we were in the scene on the station with Sisko, Odo, and Dukat, the Cardassians don't waste any time in trying to get all the information they can. And this Obsidian Order observer, Corinus here, who comes in, she just jumps right on Sisko and shows that she feels she completely has the upper hand. Give us a detailed recounting of all the weapon systems of the Defiant, beginning with its phaser banks. You tell us everything that you know, and Sisko is like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'll tell you what you need to know when I'm ready to.
I will tell you what you need to know when I deem that you need to know it, and not beforehand. And that's what I love about Sisko being here, is that, yes, there's a diplomaticness to his demeanor, but there's also a hard edge that you need when you're dealing with something, a race like the Cardassians.
Yeah.
You have to play their game the way they play it. And Sisko's able to do that. And he's able to do it really well. It's kind of like when you see them using the Tellarites in Enterprise, and Archer has to kind of adopt that style. And he starts to get the hang of it. I think Sisko, after so many years of dealing with Cardassians, unfortunately dealing with them just kind of rubs off on you.
What do you think about this scene right here where they're watching this other ship that's emitting the signature of the Defiant, but it's not? And Sisko, of course, sees what's going on, and Dukat is just completely sucked in by it. I feel like this scene makes Dukat look really stupid. But then again, we know from later on during the Dominion War that Dukat really isn't very good at military strategy. So what do you make of this scene? Obviously, Corinus here is impressed with Sisko and very disappointed with Dukat.
Well, Dukat is only good at one thing, and that is trying to make Dukat look good.
Yeah.
When it comes to military tactics or anything else, he likes to think he's a great leader, but really he's kind of, you know, the kid eating paste in the back of the class. That's Dukat, you know, whereas Sisko is...
I have this visual of Dukat in the back of the room.
Well, you should. I was trying to be as graphic as possible with how stupid Dukat actually is when it comes to anything but making himself look good.
Yeah.
And he's good at taking advantage of every single situation that will make him look like a hero or, you know... But he isn't good when it comes down to making the decisions needed to actually be the person that is the true hero. Because
that's a good point.
He just doesn't care enough.
But he I'm watching it the whole time, and he's so sucked in, and even I'm going like, Dukat, think for a minute. You know, at least consider the possibility that that's a trick.
Yeah.
Because, wow, it's just so easy to lure your ships away.
Yeah, it is. Well, and maybe we know if people like him were in charge, maybe we know why, you know, they didn't win that Federation Cardassian War.
Yeah. Now, here's another question for you. Is it not shockingly easy for someone in the crew quarters to just disable the entire ship?
You only got singed. You know, the whole plasma
relay. Let's just blow up a panel in the crew quarters, and then the whole ship's dead in the water.
Well, you know, you have to be really good, and Kira is very good at sabotaging things. That's what she's been doing for most of her life. So it is a bit of a stretch that you could blow up a panel in your quarters, and that would bring the whole ship down. Seems like a badly designed ship.
They are going to kill more people.
Especially a warship, right? I mean, this ship is so heavily armored and fortified in every respect, and yet she's able to take everything out so easily from the crew quarters. It's kind of surprising. It's one of those things where you kind of have to go with it, with the story, to keep the story moving along, but it does make you question... just like we were questioning the security protocols, it makes you kind of question the design of it.
Well, you know, like Scotty said, the more you overwork the plumbing, the easier it is to stop up the drain. So
that's true.
Maybe that's exactly what's happened with the Defiant.
Oh, I'm sorry, Commander. I was thinking about my son's birthday.
I think this answers your question, Chris, is that Dukat is sitting here thinking about his son and his family. He's never, ever thinking about the actual mission. He's always thinking about other things, and they're always kind of personal things. It's always something about him or about his quote-unquote family, which he says he cares so much about, you know? Like, it's an amazing ego trip, and it's everywhere in this series once you start to look for it. And this is just another example of him using something to inflate his own ego to make himself feel better. Maybe to get Sisko off the fact that, man, this guy's really not that smart. Oh, he's a good dad.
Well, I do think Dukat makes a good point here, though, which is, I mean, when you look at our own world and you wonder why hatreds persist for as long as they have. I mean, you look at the Middle East, and you look at the fact that there's been conflict there for millennia, and why can't that be overcome? And at its core, when you have groups that dislike each other, it has to come from building trust, and of course, parents teaching their children not to fall into that trap again. And even when you make progress there, it's very easy for things to collapse again. And so what is happening right here, as Dukat points out, is going to undo any amount of trust that has been built between Cardassia and the Federation, because you have a young person who doesn't look at the big picture. They only look at the fact that this person kept me from spending time with my father. This person is from the enemy anyway. And I'm going to get my revenge on them when I can. And so it does lead to the prolonging of conflict over time.
I can see what you're saying, but I also think it's about that parent and how they talk to their child, you know, like about the situation. And, you know, it is about the parent to frame everything, to help the kid have the perspective that they can't have because they're a child, and to help mold how they think. And, you know, Dukat is saying this. Yes, it is true that if his son left to his own devices, that's what he'll think. But that's where the job of being a good parent comes in, to help mold and to change that. And so, I mean, it's an easy cop-out to say, oh, my son's going to see this as nothing more than a reason to hate the Federation. Only if you let him continue to have that thought process. You know,
though I don't think Dukat is the parent who's going to explain.
No, I do not think that Dukat is going to care enough to make sure that his son doesn't hate the Federation.
Right.
You're not very good at it.
I love this part when Kira calls out Tom and says, you're not very good at being a terrorist, you know.
Reports in Cardassian politics than in actually hurting.
Well, and that's because, you think about this, Tom Riker and Dukat kind of have some things in common, in that they want to be the hero of their own story.
Every Cardassian outpost along the border.
Because these stakes are far greater than border.
It is very
outposts.
True, though. I mean, she makes a great point here that this is Tom Riker, but here he's very much acting like Will Riker. Like, he may be Tom, but the character feels like Will. He's concerned about all the things that he would be concerned about as the first officer of the Enterprise.
Yeah, that's very true, and I think it speaks to the part of him that still is so much Will Riker, you know? And they had so many experiences that were the same up until the accident. So,
do you think part of it is an unwillingness on the part of the writers to actually write Tom as a really different person? Like, they're so used to the character of Will Riker that they're kind of locked in to, like, this is who Riker is, and maybe they're not breaking out of that mold as much as they should for the story?
No, I don't think so, because I do think if you are thinking about that, the foundation of Tom's life is Will's life, that it is very hard in, you know, 10 years or whatever to take away 30 some odd years of experience. You know, that's a hard thing to get away with. And who Tom wants to be is basically who Riker has turned into. And so there's still a part of him probably that has those drives and desires. So when you really start to peel back the layers of who Tom Riker is, this is only like, you know, this whole Maquis thing is only the very outer layer. Everything else is still so much of who Will was. And I think there's just the tension for him of trying to differentiate himself, but at the same time, struggling with his own identity of there's so much of him that's really very much like Will Riker.
Yeah, that is a good point. This scene here is very interesting, too, in that it tells us a good bit about the Cardassians and the struggle between the military and the intelligence agency. So we're not even getting into the rest of the government or the people themselves, but there is this real tug of war between them. And as you mentioned earlier, we find out the beginning of these plans that the Obsidian Order has, and of course the fleet that they're building up that they will eventually make use of.
Well, and it is interesting the way that this, the Obsidian Order has taken advantage of the civilian government.
Yeah.
And gained more and more power unbeknownst to anybody else. So
yeah,
it really
like
is
real life on Earth a little bit.
It does sound kind of familiar, doesn't it?
A message from the warship Craxon. They say they found an unusual neutrino signature in their
Craxon
sector.
Craxon is a very doesn't feel Craxon, like a Cardassian name, right?
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think of the old video game Zaxxon from the 80s when I hear this name. The Zaxxon. Where's the Zaxxon? It's in the arcade down the street.
If it is the Defiant, they're in position to make a run for the Arias system.
We still don't
know. Here we go, the Arias system.
The anti-proton beam is very convenient, right? We've had cloaking devices in Star Trek for all of these years, and suddenly, I know that they got the idea from the Jem'Hadar, and the Dominion was able to penetrate the cloak with an anti-proton beam. But once they know that, it's just so easy for them to suddenly penetrate the cloak here.
They're going to call their nine friends, and you are going
to... You would think you would still need to figure out the engineering behind that.
They can chase me all they want.
Yeah, I do think that's one of those things, you know, Star Trek kind of creates its cheat.
Yeah.
In the technobabble. And then it never really works any harder to kind of explain it any further. And so, oh, well, it worked here. We can just move it over here. You know,
yeah.
No matter if it's a Romulan cloak or a Klingon cloak or, you know, whatever. So, yeah, it's definitely a contrivance of Star Trek that we just kind of let go.
Do you think that would have worked in Harry Potter if someone had shined like an anti-proton flashlight at Harry Potter's cloak? Would they have been able to see him through the cloak?
No, I don't think so, because actual, genuine invisibility cloaks are completely invisible. Now, the ones that are just charmed or whatnot, yes, but, you know, so very rare, a true invisibility cloak.
And don't you think that Dukat would have been a member of Slytherin?
I thought the Obsidian Order didn't have any...
Yes, I think he would have been, like, the head Slytherin. Like, he is as slimy as it gets, and he kind of looks snake-like, so there you go.
Well, he does. Well, the Cardassians are reptilian, right? So.
He could have been, like, the mascot.
The mascot.
The mascot of Slytherin.
I can see him dancing on the sideline during Quidditch or something.
That would have been awesome. Well, and I mean, while we're at it, wouldn't Sisko just be the head of the Gryffindor house? I mean, can't you just see that? The bold, brave, courageous captain. I mean, he's perfect for Gryffindor. Pretty sure that Jadzia Dax is a Hufflepuff, though. She, I mean, I know she's real sciencey and smart, so she could be a Ravenclaw, but she's so vivacious and fun-loving, she's a Hufflepuff.
Maybe that's what an experienced Starfleet officer would do. Maybe that's what Will Riker would do, but it's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to continue the mission.
It's not the mission you're thinking about, is it? Or even
what do you think about Riker's determination here? I mean, he knows, again, we talked earlier and you made some really good points about how you don't just lose 30 years of experience. And so everything in Tom Riker's mind should be telling him that this is a completely lost cause. So, as Kira says, does he just want to be the hero, or does he actually think that he's going to achieve something by continuing to fly into the face of five ships in front of him, 10 ships behind.
I know how you can find out.
Well, what I love here in this scene, is I just had to mention, is I love that Sisko's being a great politician.
Yeah. Well, and Kira's being a great politician as well on the other side.
Exactly. So both of them really working in tandem, even though they're not together.
Yeah.
Now, on the Riker question, that I guess that really is the crux of this story, you know. And I don't know if we ever get a clear enough answer in the episode. I think that he doesn't just want to be the hero because, of course, he ends up turning himself in, sacrificing himself. And I guess in some ways that makes him a hero, but not in the way that he wanted.
But someone has to pay for what...
And so, I don't know. What's so great about the character, he's got a lot of complexity to him, and sadly we never see him again. And we all know Frakes would have been up for doing this role again because I think he enjoyed the stretch acting-wise, because Riker's really not tough, I don't think, for Frakes to play because it's very much similar to his own character in real life. But... This every time I see this episode, it just makes me sad that we never see Tom Riker again, because it would have been perfect in maybe some of those Maquis episodes down the line or something. Maybe he'd been freed or whatever. Maybe he fell in with Eddington or something. So, I mean, there's just so many opportunities, and they never, you know, pick him up.
Yeah. Well, I think they were planning too. You know, Ira said that we'll probably see him again, but then it never worked out, so I don't know exactly what, you know, broke down there, or maybe it's just the direction that the show went in, but you do have cases, you know, when Dukat was able to just wipe out the Maquis, you know, there was a chance there where you could have had Riker come back in and just tell that story a bit differently. Yeah, there were opportunities, and it would have been great to see him. Because he could have really made the character... Right now we talk about how the character just feels more like Will, but if you had him come back a few times, you could have really evolved the character of Tom.
Well, yeah, and then been really nice at that point. You could have actually maybe had a little bit of a romance, you know, maybe in the fourth season or fifth season or something for Kira that would have been more interesting than just her having the guy that came on the station that she kissed, you know.
Well, and maybe later, maybe he could have come back in, like, season 7, and he was in love with Kira, Odo was in love with Kira, and they could have had an ombojutsu match to see who would win her heart.
Man, why weren't we writing Deep Space Nine, Chris? Every time we do the orb, I think, why weren't we writing Deep Space Nine?
Because we never brought back ombojutsu either.
Well, we just did, though, in our rewrite.
A few but on seasons. The screen, they never brought it back. You know?
Well, but that asks an interesting question, because I think in the end, you know, one of the things about Deep Space Nine is there were so many breadcrumbs of things that they could have followed up on.
Yeah.
And some things were just bound to fall through the cracks. And it you know, this one, it kind of makes sense. I'm sure that... as they move forward, Frakes got more and more into directing, and I'm guessing he probably got a little bit more expensive just because of the movies that they did for TNG. So things change. But at the same time, I kind of think Frakes probably would have come on and done whatever they wanted him to.
You know? Well, he came on Enterprise, so yeah.
That is true. I mean, him and Marina Sirtis both, so.
Oh, well, maybe that's it. Maybe... Marina would have had to have had a role in any future episodes, and that way he would have definitely come back.
Yeah, I could see that. And see, what I'm thinking would be great, I could imagine like a scene with Tom Riker and Sisko where they're cooking together would have been fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, like I could really see that happening.
We talked about that once. I think it was on the Ready Room, about them having a ditty off because they both like to cook and they get excited and they'll like sing or whistle or hum.
Yeah. And then they could have the a trombone. Jazz off, you know, yeah. Like, can't you see that happen as well?
Awesome.
I mean, this is great stuff. I do like the decision that he makes, you know, that, let us.
There's no reason for you to continue.
Sacrifice yourself. Make yourself the hero of the story here. in the best way possible. You don't have to die, and you know this mission is never going to succeed. So do what's best for more than just yourself. And I think in the end, he does prove himself to be a true hero.
Well, he makes the Riker decision, whether it's Will or Tom. This feels like the decision that Riker would make. And it actually feels like what Will Riker would have done as well, where he would really hold on to his position and stand up for it. But then when he realizes that maybe that's not the wisest path, then he would acquiesce and then he would make this decision. And it's interesting because Tom Riker doesn't have that experience of being with Captain Picard, because you could argue that that wisdom comes from all of Riker's time serving under Picard. But the fact that Tom Riker has that similar view shows that that's inherent in Will's character, in Riker's character in the first place, and maybe it was just nurtured by Picard.
Well, and
turn us about.
You can see the toll the decision is making on him, and I think Frakes does a good job of playing this part, the turn here. I think he does it really well, and I really like the way that the political intrigue is playing here on Cardassia. Again, this episode is doing so much, and it becomes so much bigger to the Deep Space Nine saga than Tom Riker came on. You know, we had Frakes on. And what I love is that, yeah, it's kind of a stint. You know, we've got Jonathan Frakes on. But really, this episode is so much bigger than that to the overall story of Deep Space Nine. And I think that's really smart writing way to use, you know, your awesome guest star in a way to accentuate your series in the best possible way.
Well, they did that well on here. They do it here. You know, this story works great. It doesn't feel like he's here just for a cameo. And they did the same thing with Majel Barrett when she came on to play Lwaxana. They told great stories involving her, and it wasn't like it was a cameo. She was really integral to the story, and the result to the story actually meant something for the series and the characters afterwards.
Prepare to beam me aboard.
Well, and as we have kind of mentioned, I think, throughout the run of the Orb, a lot of times Deep Space Nine takes the characters from the Next Generation and gives them a real weight to them that they might not have had on the Next Generation. And they do a great job here with the Tom Riker character. And I wish he could have gotten the Deep Space Nine treatment a few more times, because they would have really created an incredible character that I think fans would have loved even more if we had gotten to see him just a few more times.
Well, he did get one more kiss at the end, so.
Yes, that's true. Just one look, and Kira knew. Ooh,
set course for the Federation. Warp 8.
But what you're saying is true in that, I mean, it highlights the fact that DS9 is about the characters, not the situations, right? Because I think that's why they bring TNG characters over, and we feel like it works better because they're actually telling stories about the characters and not so much about the mission itself.
Well, and yeah, no, that's a great point, and they are doing that through this, you know, again, what could have been kind of a, hey, we're using Jonathan Frakes, you know, and a very surface-level thing, but no, they're really using this to deepen the character of him, of Kira. They're also furthering the Deep Space Nine saga story by continuing to create this mystery inside the Cardassian Empire of what's going on behind the political scene. And so all of those things together create a really fascinating episode that I really enjoy. I have to say, it's a Deep Space Nine episode that you can pop in anytime and watch. And then once you're finished watching it, you're like, oh, do I need to go watch that duology now? I need to go watch that duology now. So you can watch, you know, when the Romulan and Cardassian fleets go through the wormhole and try to destroy the Founder's homeworld. It's fantastic.
Yeah, that's the connection. That's the fleet that the Obsidian Order is building up here, is the fleet that goes over. And, I mean, it's really one of the trigger points of the entire war in the first place, right? Because that's where the Alpha Quadrant powers, Alpha Beta powers, if we want to be accurate, really, you know, step on the Dominion's lawn too much. And it really pushes them too far. So
you're saying the Dominion is like the old guy, get off my lawn!
That's right. Maybe if we had stayed off their lawn, there would have never been a war.
At least Porthos didn't poop on it, so.
That's true, because then Sisko would have had to cut some logs in order to apologize, and he'd have his hair braided down and everything like Archer. It's one of the weird moments from Enterprise. How do you apologize for peeing on the bushes? Well, you have to cut down a tree and
make a speech.
Slice the logs. So yeah. Make a speech. So there you go. All right. Well, that's the end of the episode. I hope everyone enjoyed the commentary. There were so many things I wanted to mention along the way, but of course, when we're talking about one thing, you see stuff go by. So maybe we should do B-side commentaries as well sometime, Matthew.
B-side
all the things
commentary.
We didn't mention the first time.
It's not really our best, but we did what we could. Where we only talk about the uniforms and stuff that they wear and the looks and the hair. Yeah.
Yeah. We could have like very specialized commentaries where we only focus on one element. Yeah.
If you want to see that, make sure you let us know in the Babel Conference.
That's right. In the Babel Conference. All right. Well, commentaries aren't the only thing we've been doing here on the network recently. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
I think all of us Star Trek fans at one point or another probably retreat into this universe we love, Star Trek, that is, it's a fictional world.
What are you talking about, Zachary? Are you suggesting that like fans might decide to buy microphones and like talk about it like it's real for hours on end?
Melodic Treks.
This may be the only time we get to do something, and we have to make sure it's as good as it gets, that we try and put on all the great moments.
Saturday Morning Trek.
Dorothy had a little bit of a fit with the animators. They had said over and over again, there is no moon in the Vulcan sky.
I think it was like the first episode that aired of the original series when they mentioned this, because Uhura walks up to Spock and she's like, tell me I'm beautiful. Tell me that I would look good in your moon. And he's like, Vulcan has no moon.
I'm not surprised.
Continuing mission.
I would do a new issue and I would print them out and then staple them together, and it would have weight and it would land on the table with a thump. And I was like, wow, all of that, I did this.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find our podcasts everywhere that you get your audio. In iTunes, we're a featured content provider with Apple, and we have a whole artist page there in the iTunes store. You can also find us on Stitcher and Windows Phone and BlackBerry, SoundCloud. We're now on Google Play Music. Google finally launched the podcasts in Google Play Music. So if you're an Android user, you should be able to search for The Orb or any of our shows there in your Google Play Music app, and it should come up. So hopefully that'll make it easier for everyone on Android to consume podcasts. And also you can go to the website, you can stream from the show pages, you can download the MP3 files. And I do highly recommend you checking out the Trek FM Complete Master Feed if you're new to the network, because that contains every episode of every show that we do and sometimes some additional content as well. It's a really great way to get a feel for the breadth of discussion that we have here on the network, because we cover just about everything you can think of related to Star Trek and stuff beyond Star Trek as well. And it's really easy there, all in one feed. Matthew, you just mentioned the Babel Conference, so if people want to share their thoughts on our commentary today or anything else about DS9, that's one of the great places for them to go. Tell us about that really quickly.
Well, the Babel Conference is our listeners-only discussion group there on Facebook. If you are on Facebook, go to the search field there, type Babel into that search field, and it will let you write in. Now, it is a listeners-only discussion group, and that means that you do have to be approved to be let in, but just request to be let in. We'll let you right in. You can talk with everybody that's been listening to the shows and have joined the group. It's a lot of fun, and gives you the opportunity to dive in a little bit deeper with the hosts and the listeners from the network. So be sure to check that out.
Yeah, we keep it that way where you have to click to join, because we don't want it to be open to all of Facebook. We don't want just every random person who likes Star Trek a little bit to be in that group because we want it to be an extension of the conversations that we have on the shows. So we only mention it here on the air, and that's why we have people join, and then we'll let you in. We just want to know that you actually are a listener of the network when you come in. So great group we have over there. Other ways you can contact us on Twitter. If you're not on Facebook, you can find us on Twitter. Our username is TrekFM. You can also go to our website, trek.fm/contact. You'll find a form there. Just choose to send to a show and choose the orb. That'll come to both Matthew and me by email. And you can also send us a voicemail if you like. Just go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. That's the word speak and the word pipe together. .com/trekfm, and all you need is the mic on your tablet or your phone or your computer, and you can record a message and upload it right there from the page, and that will come right over to us, and we'd love to hear your voice. If you want to help us keep these shows coming, it actually takes quite a lot of money to run the network, and we do have a way that you can support us. If you want to help us cover the cost of production, hosting, and distribution, bandwidth is quite expensive for us because we push out about, Matthew, it's like 7 terabytes per month right now of data that we push out. So it's a lot. We do like, we'll get up like 50, 60 gigabytes just in a day. So it goes by really quickly, and we can use your help. If you go to patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you can find out how you can support the network. You can contribute any amount you want. We do have different milestone levels, and we have different perks associated with those, and you can get all the information right over there. We have, of course, the Patrons Roundtable, where you can get on mic and talk Star Trek with other patrons and hosts from the network. And those go into the master feed. We also have the exclusive website Patron Zone, where we put early show releases and we have artwork and ringtones and sometimes video clips and all kinds of other things there for you to download anytime you want if you are a patron at the $5 level and higher. That's $5 per month. So go check it out, patreon.com/trekfm. And we also want to thank our associate producers here on The Orb, Ruth Ward, Will Wynn, and Ken Tripp. We really appreciate their help and their support in getting the show out to everyone. Of course, Will Wynn is the content manager here on the network, and Ken Tripp you can hear on Standard Orbit, our original series show, and Ken also edits that podcast for all you guys. So thank you so much, Ruth, Will, and Ken, for your support. And we really thank everyone who's supporting the show and everyone who's listening out there. Now, Matthew, when you're not, you know, trying to figure out how to make your removable sideburns even more believable, where can people find you?
It's taken me a long time, Chris, but I'm going to get it perfected. You can see all the tests on Twitter at MattRushing02.
You do that. You take pictures of yourself doing tests and sideburns.
Yeah.
Now, Matthew, I'm pretty sure that you'd post those on Instagram.
That's right. I do post that on Instagram at mrushing02. They come through to Twitter. You know, Instagram is wonderful at sharing things. You can also find me doing literary treks with Dan, talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek. You can also find me on our general geek show here on the network. We have so many fandoms we love as Star Trek fans that are outside of the Star Trek universe. Well, the 602 Club is the best place to talk about those, so we just pick a great new topic in that each week, talk about a movie or TV show or book or whatever. We're covering it all, so check that out. And then I'm also talking about Star Wars with my friend John Mills over on Aggressive Negotiations, and you can find us on iTunes. Now, Chris, when you're not trying to find other uses for the anti-proton beam, where can we find you?
Yeah, I've been working on those. You know, I was playing Luigi Mansion on Nintendo DS, and I was thinking that an anti-proton beam would be very useful in that game. You know, you can use it to detect ghosts and things, right?
Yeah, that would be great. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I'm going to take that to market. So when I'm not working on that plan, you can find me elsewhere on the network on The Ready Room, where we talk about all 5 live-action Star Trek series. So that does include DS9. We do that every 5th show. Sometimes Matthew is there with me on The Ready Room. We also talk about Star Trek news there. And you can find me on the short news show Hyper Channel. You can also find my writing about Star Trek on the official website at StarTrek.com. Just search for my name, C. Brian Jones, letter C, Brian with a Y, and Jones. Make those 3 different elements there when you search on StarTrek.com, and the articles should come on up. And if you want to push all those together into just one stream, C. Brian Jones, you can find me at that name on Twitter, on Facebook, pretty much everywhere in social media. You can also find me there in the Babel Conference talking Star Trek with people as well.
Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.
Recording. All right. Obsidian order pants.
Those are really painful. Just FYI, I just want to be careful with those. They really cut you in some uncomfortable places.
I can see Ducat saying, like, those pants are tighter than any pants I've ever seen.
Those pants are the tightest in the land.
And then Sisko would say, I thought the Obsidian Order weren't allowed to have pants.
I got my tight pants on. Have you seen that with Will Ferrell?
I have, but Fallon? It's been quite a while. Yeah.
So can you imagine them having a tight pants off? Sisko and Ducat.
Sisko and Ducat?
Yes.
And the Obsidian Order woman is the judge?
Oh, that would be great. I love it. Just that needs to be a thing.
That could be a really popular meme, yeah.
Yeah. I love
it. Okay. Let's jump on in here. Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our Deep Space Nine, blah, 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 our dedicated blah. Okay, one more time.